welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. Christmas and the other end-of-year holidays are a time of excitement and anticipation, fueled by several things. Among them are memories of holidays past, family gatherings recalled from childhood, happy times with Grandpa and Grandma. Now, for centuries now, there have also been religious reasons, prominent among them the celebration of Jesus' birth. That celebration was grafted onto an even earlier tradition in which humans made merry at this time of the year as northern latitudes passed through their darkest day, the winter solstice, and the days finally began growing longer. Now, that said, for more than a century, we've also made this our biggest annual occasion of gift-giving. To give a gift, we first have to acquire it, and for most of us, that means spending money and buying things. It's a task we simultaneously tisk-tisk for its excesses at this season and then jump into with both feet. It's holiday shopping, the basis of Christmastime commercialism. We see and often rue commercialism in all the advertising, from pop-ups on our electronic devices to billboards, to print ad circulars and catalogs arriving unsolicited in the mail, to banners. Well, you can condemn commercialism, or you can endure it, or even delight in it. It's a fact of life this time of year, and has been so for a long, long time. Today, we're going to delve into what drives all of that end-of-year commercialism. Later in the show, we'll take a trip in our imaginations back to the 1950s to recall or find how families gussied up their homes for the holidays. First, we have a professor of marketing to talk to us about the commercial aspects of Christmas time. Kisan Joseph teaches at the School of Business at the University of Kansas in Lawrence. He joins us by phone. Good morning, Kisan.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Let's begin with a basic question. Most stores and websites are open year-round. What makes these last few months of the year in America so important to retailers?
Well, if you think about it, in terms of the units purchased by consumers, the sort of understanding is that about 20% of all sales are made by consumers at this time of the year. And so retailers are very hopeful that they will get customers into the store at the time when they're doing this intense shopping. And it may not be that they're making money at this time, but the hope is that the customers have a good experience, and down the road, the retailers benefit from the loyalty and the exposure.
So dipping their feet in the water of the Christmas time shopping may be something that lasts year-round.
Oh, yes, because as many of us know, there are some fantastic deals to be had around this time. So from the retailer side, while that's wonderful for us as consumers, from the retailer side, the truth is that those deep discounts are really hurting into current period profits. But the hope is that this is the gift that's going to give down the road for the retailers, yes.
Now, for any advertising medium, too, it's also a make-or-break time of year. I think of newspapers, commercial broadcasters, catalog designers, printers. There's a whole outside industry that also does well in these days.
Yes, and it's, the classic wisdom is true. Black Friday sort of marks the time when the books turn from red to black. So as a general rule, for most industries, that is true because some of your fixed costs have sort of been covered, and now is the time to make money. So, yes, we're all familiar with the term black, and that's the historical connotation. You move from red to black, black on the books, and then hence the name Black Friday.
Now, these days, we see hints of Christmas in stores even before Halloween, but the shopping season begins in earnest right about Thanksgiving. In the 1920s and early 1930s, merchants downtown sponsored a parade right after Thanksgiving, ending with a float featuring Santa Claus as sleigh and reindeer. And a continuing tradition since the 1920s has been the holiday lights on the Country Club Plaza. For more than a half century, the plaza merchants have made the turning on of lights on Thanksgiving night a big, big deal. All these events clearly were aimed at getting us in the buying mood not long after we finished our turkey and dressing. Today, Professor Joseph, we talk much about Black Friday, but why does Black Friday hold such a charmed place on a merchant's calendar? Why is it that day in particular?
Well, let me back up a little bit. There's also evidence that it's not quite the deals are happening even before. And so we're sort of caught in a race where everybody wants to get in a little bit earlier. And so if you look, the excitement sort of builds even before, and there are some deals on Wednesday. Online, the deals are shaping up at all times. So that mark on the calendar, which used to sort of be the dividing line, is sort of being a little flexible, and it's been moving ever so slowly further and further before, moving ahead in time. So it's a sort of a game where everybody is caught up into, and everybody wants to be first, so the boundary keeps moving forward.
Is there a practical effect to being first, or is it basically just, I want to go before you?
Well, sometimes it can all make all the difference, as the classic saying, the early bird gets the worm. So if you have a deal that's a few hours before, there are consumers who are eager to wait in line in the cold, in the dark, to snatch up those deals.
This waiting in line business, the idea of massing for a certain purpose, is there a psychology involved in that in retailing and creating these lines?
Well, maybe it goes back to some of our evolutionary origins. Where as hunters, we had to wake up early and, you know, stalk the game. And the more diligent we were, and perhaps the more planned we were, the more successful we were. So maybe it's something that's wired into our basic psyche, and that's what's showing up. Now that the game is gone, this is the new form of game.
This year, quite a few stories in the media expressed amazement that some stores were opening on Thursday night at 8 o'clock instead of midnight, on Thanksgiving night at 8. Now, what you're saying is that wasn't the extent of it. Some places were advertising sales and opening up and doing business even before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and the other thing that's happened, Monroe, is that now retailers not only have a physical channel, but they also have online stores. And I think this season was marked by intense price matching through online counterparts. So Target and Best Buy had teams where they had they monitored prices in what they called real time, or they practiced what is known as dynamic pricing. And sometimes prices were changed even within the hour to make sure that prices on certain marquee products. And here's the reason. Some fast-moving, some marquee products are used by consumers to create what is known as a price image for the store.
Uh-huh.
So every retailer wants to make sure that on those marquee products, they leave the interaction with the customer in such a way saying, hey, I went to store X and I got a great deal on this wonderful hot product. They must be a good store to have good deals, and the retailer wants that favorable price image to stick beyond the shopping season. So aggressively, retailers have been sort of matching prices through their secondary channel, which is their online channel. And they've had teams, like I said before, monitoring prices in real time.
Kansas City, what was holiday shopping like this year for you? Have you noticed any changes or trends this year in marketing? Have you watched prices change dynamically? Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or comment on Facebook. So prices can change within an hour, within a day. It seems like shopping somewhere in the never-never land between online and brick-and-mortar stores is almost like trying to decide when to sell your stocks or when to fold in a poker game.
Right, right. Well, at some point, you've got to, when you see a price that you think is a good deal, you've got to bite the bullet and go for it. And I know I bought appliances this Thanksgiving season, and even as I walked out of the store, I know I paid $50 or $75 more, but, you know, at some point you got to say, how much searching can I do? I need to have the TV back into my room. So you got to bite the bullet, and by and large, you're doing all right. You're at least coming off a little better than standard prices. Did you get the best possible deal in town? The odds of that are pretty low, because you got to be pretty astute to get that. But most people are making reasonably well, although not like bandits.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd. Now that the holiday shopping season is reaching a crescendo, we're talking about how this became the shoppingest time of the year in Kansas City and the rest of the country. So we consumers are never going to be armed with all the data and statistics that the retailers are, Dr. Joseph.
Oh, that is true. I think, you know, the technology allows retailers to begin to actually get the pulse of how price movements are going. But at the end of the day, the good news is that in competitive markets, consumers benefit. If I may just give you a story about my own shopping experience. When I first moved to Lawrence, Kansas, we bought a refrigerator, and we bought a sort of an advanced refrigerator with, you know, at that time, 20 years ago, the ice machine and the water were sort of upgrades. And I think we paid $1,100 for that product, and it took us about 4 days to get home. And recently we said, you know, it's time to upgrade. And we bought a better model, more depth, more features, for about 750. So, you know, the good thing about competitive markets is amazingly consumers come out better because of competition, because of all of this price matching. So let's not forget the fact that at the end of the day, consumers actually have more in their hands for the same dollar. In my example, for example, I'm paying 30, 40% less for a better product 20 years later, and I just reflected on that. I said, that is amazing to have such buying power. And so I don't want to come off like a materialistic person, but at the end of the day, that is a heck of a deal when you think about it.
Is it also true that people in rural areas farther away with perhaps not the retail choices that you have in an urban area may suffer because of that lack of competition?
I think that's generally true. And if you look at, you know, anecdotally, if you look at what happens at some of our malls at this time, they are packed with cars and parking is difficult. So I must imagine that what's happening is that the deal is actually attracting people from out of the traditional shopping area as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe, and this is anecdotal, I don't have data, but I'm guessing that good malls and good retailers and good deals attract people beyond the traditional boundaries.
Now, years ago, as I recall, in fact, it's not that many years ago, the Friday after Thanksgiving was just called, and perhaps again, only anecdotally, the biggest shopping day of the year, or even the or the season, or even the year. But more recently, I've read that the last weekend before Christmas competes with it and even beats it in terms of shopping frenzy. Do you know, is that true or not?
Well, again, I think what we have to remember is that the choices that consumers have, both where they can buy the product and when they can buy it, has expanded because of online retailers. Mm-hmm. And I think that is causing people to say, do I really want to hustle into a mall and find parking and battle the traffic? And when you can sort of, in the comfort of your home, compare prices, compare features. And so some of that shift may also be the fact that, you know, now consumers have more choice. And so they're sort of spreading their purchases around because they're armed with more information, and that's causing more smoothing, maybe. I'm not sure.
Where are we in the balance of online purchases versus brick-and-mortar purchases these days?
Well, online is I'm told, still not at 10% total, but for certain categories that number may be higher, but that's a good question. Online certainly is improving, taking greater share with each season. And some of the things that that online retailers are doing are helping that cause. For example, they're able to demonstrate products better, have better comparison tables. So certainly online is getting to be a bigger part. And as we see this season for sure, the online channel has been used aggressively to make sure that retailers were price competitive.
So I can sit, which I have done, in fact, is sit down at home, check out prices online, and then head to a store and kind of know in the back of my mind a full array of the possibilities price-wise before I buy at a store.
Yes, and one of the other challenges that retailers have is that the reverse may also be happening, where consumers may be coming into the store to look at a product and then going into the online environment to get the best deal on it. And not at the Christmas season, but in general, this phenomenon is known as showrooming. Mm-hmm. And it's a big problem for retailers, where they are taking all the cost of putting the product on display, but the consumer comes in and uses the display just to get a feel for what the product looks like and then goes back to get the best deal on that product that they've identified as being best in the store. So that's actually a big big challenge year-round for many retailers, where their physical assets are actually subsidizing the consumer's search process for their ultimate online buy, which may not even happen at their online store. It may happen at a competitor's online store because there's a few dollars savings in price.
Now, these days, as I understand it, Dr. Joseph, computers and scanning technology have created ways to enumerate and track and forecast far more things than the past. Can merchants, how finely can they tune their offerings and their inventory and even their expectation that a consumer will go showroom them in the course of a big, busy season like this?
Well, I think the main impetus for retailers is to make sure that they avoid stockouts, because at this time of the year, consumers expect to walk out of the store with the product. So inventory management systems have been helped tremendously by data technologies, and our supply chain has become much more robust in that the supply chain can, can be more responsive. So that's one challenge, to avoid stockouts. But on the other side, even if something doesn't sell this season, there's always opportunities to have sales after Christmas or sales in January. There are secondary channels where these may be sold. So technology helps smoothing out that matching process.
In fact, the sales seem to be constant. Black Friday, Black Thursday, Wednesday, whatever. We might have seen the ads even as early as right after Halloween. Sales are, is anything sold at retail anymore this time of year at MSRP?
Your guess is as good as mine. I suspect not. Just like we don't expect to walk into a car dealership and pay retail, there's always an opportunity to wait and look around and get something at something less than retail, MSRP.
But still, a sale, a discount is, I presume, still a retailing and has been for a long time strategy if a product's not selling and moving.
Of course. And we are wired to sort of view everything as either losses or gains. And the reason why a sales promotion works is when we sort of see a sales promotion and we see the list price is 100 and right now it's on sale for 80, we are wired to respond to that difference. So we sort of jump towards those gains. And there is, as you can well imagine, there is pleasure in getting good deals and a satisfaction of having spent your money well. So we respond. The one ubiquitous phenomenon or well-known marketing principle is that when retailers run sales, there is generally a lift. Even if you didn't know there was a sale that was going on and you just looked at the sales numbers, you could actually look at the sales numbers and predict, we ran a sale here, because it shows up clearly in the sales data, yes.
So people take the bait after all.
yes. Like I said, this is one truism. Sales promotions generate incremental lift. And if there is one sort of theory of marketing or one fact of marketing or one law of marketing, that's sort of an empirical regularity that's been observed that, yes, sales promotions do create lift.
Speaking of consumer behavior, there are those people, and I'm not one of them, that shop early. Some people shop all year round just in preparation for Christmas. And then there are people like me who go out at the last minute and do stuff. Are there studies of consumer behavior that tells you, or does that even matter to retailers?
Well, most people are in the latter category where, they have so much going on in their lives. And you're right, if we could be planned about it, then every time we saw a good product for Uncle Joe and we said, oh, this is the tie that would fit Uncle Joe well, and we bought this in spring and then we saved it all the way to Christmas, we would come out ahead. But nobody has that kind of bandwidth to do that kind of processing, so everything gets piled up towards the end of the year.
I'm glad I'm not alone. Now we have a call from Sheila in the Northland. Good morning, Sheila.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine.
I'm shopping now, and there's Valentine's things out already, and it's freaking me out because I'm not even done with Christmas and they're having our Valentine's out already.
Now let's see, that's February 14th. Dr. Joseph, what is the strategy with that?
Well, there are people who finished their Christmas shopping and they still have additional dollars, and here's another reason for stepping out back into the store again. So, is another for those 10% of people who plan ahead, this is a good time to get it done because your January and your early February are probably very busy. Maybe you have some slack time this time. Now is a good time to get the February shopping done.
So, Sheila?
Yes?
Got a question for your – what was your shopping experience like this year, or is it still underway?
It's certainly still underway. It's been not good because we have a foreign exchange student this year, and I'm not used to something like this, and I don't know what to buy him. It's very difficult, and it's just – it's still ongoing, and I'm usually done much earlier than this.
Do you notice crowds at the malls, bigger or smaller than normal?
No, I think they're very nice people this year.
Oh.
And I think, and I'm not sure why, but everybody's much more friendly, I think. But I think the crowds are about the same to me.
Okay, friendly crowds. All right, Sheila, thank you so much for your call.
And Sheila, if I may add, it's also a way to put you into a romantic mood, to de-stress you about all the shopping that you've done, and now you want to sort of get a little de-stressed, so the retailers are helping you put you into a more placid mood, I think.
No, they're stressing me out more, and that doesn't make me romantic.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Merry Christmas.
Enjoy your shopping.
Bye-bye.
Sheila. What about the idea of the crowds? I believe I've heard, Dr. Joseph, that retailers sort of like to kind of create crowds in stores because it takes them near products they want to sell. Is there truth in that?
There are a couple of aspects to this. Yes, there's more crowds means more sales. But I think there's another aspect. The more crowds there are at your store, it's also a signal that you have an exciting product set. And again, let me go back a little bit to our evolutionary origins. I think we are generally calmed when we see other members of our herd around. And if we see other members of our herd, we are calm because we sort of assume that we are in a safe place. So crowds are good both for sales as well as the overall psychology of the shopper's psyche.
So if we see other members of our kind, and I guess if we see members not of our kind, we begin to flee.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the basic sort of logic is that, you know, the herd is here.
Uh-huh.
This must be a safe place. Uh-huh. So just the social interaction of seeing people is sort of calming for, has a sort of a psychological calming effect. And that puts you into a better mood. That might translate into more shopping dollars for the retailer. So it's a sort of a direct effect of more sales and an indirect effect. People are calmed and they enjoy the experience and they're in the store longer. And therefore, once again, more sales.
It seems as if every kind of retailer tries some kind of Christmas come on or to attract somebody during the Christmas season. But what retailers, which are the retailers that depend more heavily on this season than others? Groceries? Clothing stores?
Well, I would sort of have to imagine that groceries would sort of be steady because you've got to eat throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's much discretionary allowance to that, but it's the things like which are more discretionary. I would imagine like electronics. I think clothes, which you have a sort of an elastic budget. I'm guessing those would be and more hedonic products, products that you sort of get enjoyment from rather than utilitarian products. Would sort of see the most lift is the sort of working hypothesis I would have.
I have now gone through many decades of my life, and no one has ever given me a car for Christmas. And yet you see automobile dealers surprising their families with a wrapped car outside, you know, the big bow on it. So that's just...
Yes, and I am waiting for my wife to do the same for me as well. So one of these days.
All right. Well, we're going to be back after the break to hear more about one of the greatest holiday traditions, buying and selling. We're also going to hear more about how people decorate their houses for the holidays, and you can find out right here at the Johnson County Museum. Anyway, commercialism, family get-togethers, it's all nearly inescapable this time of year, so as Dr. Joseph says, we might as well just relax and get past it. You're listening now to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. And welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. One weekend remains before Christmas Day, one last frenzied weekend of crowded streets and stores and shoppers. For decades, we've debated how commercialism has affected this season of joy, yet we keep on buying and selling and giving gifts. Along with family and faith, shopping has entrenched itself as a holiday tradition. With us today is a professor who knows a lot about what drives the retail economy, Kisan Joseph of the School of Business at the University of Kansas in Lawrence. And joining us in this half hour is Jennifer Crane, education curator of the Johnson County Museums. The museum's all-electric house is all decked out in 1950s holiday gear, and you can see it. And Jennifer, welcome to Central Standard Friday.
Thank you.
And in a little while, you can tell us what the schedule is for people touring this house. But for now, And we were talking just before the break with Dr. Joseph about crowds. And lest anyone imagine that holiday shopping madness is a recent occurrence or cranked up only in our lifetimes, consider this from more than a century ago. In December 1905, an artist for the Kansas City Star drew the inside of a department store where a gaggle of adults jammed together, elbow to elbow, carrying wrapped packages, some of which had even fallen to the floor. From their midst came exclamations, "Only 6 more days to do my shopping." Another shopper shouted, "Get off my feet, please." And someone else in the cartoon shouted, "Cash, cash, cash." At the feet of all these adults, furiously shopping, a little girl, temporarily orphaned in the crush, bawled, "I want my mama." And that was a takeoff, a lampoon of Christmas shopping in 1905. So it is not new. Dr. Joseph, stores also increase hiring at this time of the year, just like the IRS does in April. Well, Dr. Joseph, are you there?
Indeed.
What about hiring at this time of the year? There's some more spending that stores have to do, too. They have to lay on a big sales force. When does that start?
Has to start early because you've got to sort of have it's traditionally known that there's a greater number of temporary workers around this time. So they have to be trained. They've got to be brought up to speed. The retailers have to make sure that since, like I said in the earlier part of the show, this is the time to provide a good customer experience and hopefully get customer loyalty that sort of continues throughout the year. Want to make sure that you don't have to wait in line for 45 minutes to check out because that would put a damper on the image that you have for the store. So it begins early, and traditionally retailers have beefed up their stock with a temporary staff to help with the busy crush of the season.
Kansas City, what is your earliest consumer memory of the holidays? Merchants out there, too, not only shoppers. Did the holidays of the past have more magic for you? Or even as you look back, do you recall a frantic pace? What specifically about the holidays has changed, and do you see that as a good thing or a bad thing? You can join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. Facebook is also an option. Our Twitter handle is KCURCST, and you can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Jennifer Crane of the Johnson County Museum, in the midst of all this compulsion of ours to go get gifts and go out and shop, there's a similar compulsion to dress up our homes inside and out. Back in the Eisenhower era, which is represented by your all-electric house this time of year, how did we do that?
Well, the aluminum trees are something that people remember very fondly with the color wheels. Getting away from the traditional red and green, so using colors, lots of different colors to decorate your home was a big theme as well.
It was sort of a post-war idea of let's break out of the mold, maybe, which we don't associate always with post-war stuff.
Right. And I think it also went back to a sense of prosperity. Middle-class families had survived Depression and World War II and were really looking to the future and were very happy, hopefully, very happy and wanting to use more color in their homes. And that's reflected in Christmas decorations.
Now, there are presents under the tree at the all-electric house. What kind of presents were we giving in the 1950s?
Well, it's very interesting. Of course, this is a time period when people are buying a television set for the first time. And so television finally had a role in giving people ideas about what sorts of presents to buy. And then, too, gender roles were very defined in the 50s as well. So children would be receiving gifts according to their gender. Lots of sports-related toys for the boys. And then the girls would be receiving things related to maybe being a future housewife or relating to her appearance, for example, maybe a comb, a mirror, a brush, a doll, of course. And then for boys, lots of sports-type things. And then for the adults, you'd be looking at things for the housewife who, you know, things for the home or things related to being a wife. So, again, related to her appearance or doing housework. So, for example, I know there was an ad for, I believe, a KitchenAid dishwasher. It said it was really targeting the adults to buy a dishwasher for the lady of the house, saying, you know, give her a Merry Christmas, but yourself a Happy New Year. So definitely defining what the expectations were, but also selling appliances as well. And then the men, of course, would be wanting, like, do-it-yourself type things, tools, maybe golf clubs, So very gender-specific things.
I think the house is dated in 1954,
yes,
which is a little bit, if I recall, before Barbie.
Yes.
But in plenty of time for Howdy Doody.
Absolutely. We have a Howdy Doody puppet under the tree right now. Everybody loves and remembers Howdy Doody and really enjoys looking at all the vintage toys and other items under the tree.
Because in 1954, much consumer behavior was formed by the single television channel that there was in Kansas City back then.
Absolutely.
And your TV is, but your the television in the house is a remote-controlled black and white model.
Right. Panel that covers the television has a control, so you can open the panel that goes across the television set. That's usually an exciting moment for our visitors as we flip a switch by the sofa and reveals the television set behind a painting. So that's very unexpected for our visitors. They really enjoy that.
That was a bit of luxury even in 1954.
Absolutely.
For the families. When people can tour your all-electric home and see the Christmas display?
Yes, they certainly can. We give tours every afternoon from Monday through Saturday. 10 o'clock in the morning on the next two Saturdays, we have extended tours. So people have lots of chances to get a break from their holiday shopping and tour the all-electric house. It's really a fun experience for people of all ages.
Dr. Joseph, Kisan Joseph of the University of Kansas in Lawrence, I wanted to ask you another question about Christmas shopping. In the 1860s here in Kansas City, if your Christmas shopping would pretty much be confined to the little area down near the city market near the Missouri River, over time, of course, the city has grown. The plaza has come along. Malls have come along in the 1960s and 70s. Does this diaspora of shopping possibilities, has it changed retailing much, or is it just the more opportunities, the better?
Well, I think it's, I think if you look at what these options do is at the end of the day, it provides more choice and more competition. And so my sense is that at the end of the day, the consumer is actually coming out ahead. Earlier I talked about how adjusted for inflation I got a heck of a deal on an electric appliance, a refrigerator. And so I think it augurs well for consumers to have so much competition and so much entry on the retail scene.
Now, there's been some big changes in technology since the 1950s that Jennifer talks about, where televisions and KitchenAid dishwashers were the modern miracles. Today, a miracle is occurring seemingly all the time, rolling out of an Apple store or something, and things come in small packages.
Yes.
How much have the changes in this production and technology capability changed the marketplace?
Well, let me address that question from the consumer side. And one of the things that's happening in the retail environment is that people have mobile access to the Internet. And so when they are at a store or when they are at the point of making a purchase, not only do they have the information that's presented by the retailer, they can actually access more information about that product from other retailers and other stores. And so I think that's fundamentally changing the information set to retailers. Now, this may not happen at Christmas season, but again, it's a dynamic that's coming out, and it's very interesting to see how technology is actually empowering customers with more information at the product location. And some retailers are now getting to the point where they can, or maybe soon will be, where they're using technology to say, hey, you're in my store. I can now give you a special for this product, or I want to make sure you buy something before you leave the product. So it works from the retailer's side as well. So it's going to be very fascinating, perhaps not so much this season, but in the years to come, to see how technology is going to affect information and how retailers respond to this.
So you walk in a store in the future and you get an electronic greeter instead of the person at the door.
There you go. Somewhat depersonalized. But on the plus side, also specials or offers that may be better targeted to you because there's a history and there's a dialogue channel open with the retailer and you through your smartphone device. And here's something that's unique about smartphones, which people don't realize, which is that We may share a car with our spouse, or we may share many things with our family, but typically we don't share our smartphones. And so for the first time, we have a device that is very unique and targeted or tagged to one individual, which means that retailers, marketers are building a rich information database about you, and hopefully that will translate to more meaningful marketing messages rather than messages that you're not interested about.
Jennifer Crane of the Johnson County Museum, this is a brave new world that Dr. Joseph predicts coming down the way. In the 1950s, if they were going to decorate your house, where would a person have gone for his retail information, for shopping advice?
Well, there were very elaborate displays at department stores like Macy's, Hull's, for example. They spent a lot of time decorating to get people in into the store, so you could get a lot of information that way. I would imagine also going to other people's homes for their holiday open house. That might give you some ideas.
You mean the Joneses next door that you have to keep up with?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
And I guess newspapers and the one television station, radio.
Certainly. Print ads, yes.
Otherwise, I don't believe we got as many circulars in the mail in the 1950s as now.
I would guess not.
Dr. Joseph, are people spending more on holiday stuff now or on retail stuff in general as a percentage of their income than they used to?
Great question. I don't have the data, but it certainly looks like that. When you see the crowds at the stores, it looks like that, but it's a good question. I don't have the exact figures.
Huh. And one would imagine that, but it's always been a thing. Jennifer, at the 1950s all-electric home, where it's decorated for Christmas time, you mentioned colors earlier. What is the predominant color in a 50s decor?
Well, there's a lot of pink, a lot of bright colors. In our home, we have a lot of bright mean green, really, is all throughout the house. But lots of pink and silver and green in our particular home, yes.
Kansas City, if you have memories of Christmas, especially the commercial memories, which are the ones that they can stick with us as well as any other, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or even tweet us at KCURCST. Now, Dr. Joseph, what's going to happen in January when all this is done? Is that simply more sales? Retailers face, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with all this inventory? How do they manage the post-Christmas time?
That's a great question. There's always an issue that you can't perfectly match demand and supply. So, yes, retailers are going to have excess product for some SKUs. And so the solution there is sales. Or also there are secondary channels which now begin to accept such products that didn't sell well during the season, discount channels. Some of them are online where you can buy these products for a lower price. So that's the next set of headaches that retailers have after this process.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Munro Dodd. Our guest in this segment is Jennifer Crane of the Johnson County Museums, and we also have with us Dr. Kisan Joseph of the University of Kansas School of Business. Jennifer is curator of education at the Johnson County Museum, where the all-electric house is decked out in 1950s holiday gear, and you can go visit it. They have a schedule for that. Jennifer, I believe in the 1950s, people were still making a stab at doing homemade decorations.
Yes, they certainly were. We have a great example of that at the house. We have large cutouts in the yard of Santa and his sleigh and trees and a snowman, and they came directly from a pattern in a December 1954 issue of Popular Mechanics. So, yes, that was definitely a very big fad, do-it-yourself home decorations, which is something people have really gotten away from today.
What are some other things that people made, and how did they go about doing it?
Maybe lots of ornaments around the house. And then, of course, you're expected to certainly make a lot of food mm-hmm. as well, people having spent a lot more time on food preparation as well, so you could be making food. Certainly not unusual to spend an entire day making a very elaborate meal.
And how is this represented by you at the museum that have to put on these displays?
We do have some fake food in the kitchen. But, I think that do-it-yourself thing, unfortunately, has lessened in recent years, but certainly a lot of that in the 50s, certainly people making their own ornaments. I know the styrofoam balls were big. So a lot of people remember those.
Sequins and styrofoam
right,
balls.
Right, sequins, felt ornaments as well. Yes.
And all members, and even people who weren't handy could make stuff out of a
That's
styrofoam
right.
ball by sticking a pin, a sequin in.
That's right.
We've been talking about how technology is affecting the searching of consumers and the opportunities for retailers to track consumers and adjust prices dynamically. But I just wanted to add that technology also has changed the nature of how we decorate homes for Christmas. And just three houses away from my house, we have a neighbor who actually uses computer software to create a light display that is synced to music, which he beams out of an FM channel. And so we have a steady stream of cars that go by our house to watch the light and music display. And so it's home decorations, to me, has also now become high-tech with computer software making these displays. And our neighbor actually spends 30, 40 hours writing the code for the sound and light show. So it's not only retail pricing, but also how we decorate our homes being impacted by technology.
Frankly, Dr. Joseph, if you can be candid, how do you like that being near so near your house during the holiday season?
Well, I must say it makes getting in and out of my driveways a little bit more difficult. But, hey, I say it's the holiday season, and it's a little bit of inconvenience for me and my family, but it's a lot of free joy for a lot of people. So I sort of flow with it, and I think our neighbor in question has been very good. He has signs actually made out saying that please do not block driveways. He has red cones to ensure smooth traffic flow. So he does the best job he can of putting up a great show, and he does a good job of making sure the traffic flows well. But I don't want to be a Grinch, and a little bit of discomfort for me, a little bit of hassle for 3 weeks, but a lot of joy, and so it's the least I can do.
Now, Bobby adds on Twitter that he remembers department stores' purchases could once be gift-wrapped, but asks, do department stores even have gift-wrap sections anymore? Either of you, pitch in.
Jennifer, did you want to add something?
Well, I've noticed they're kind of doing away with that. I don't know if that's a staffing issue that they're cutting back on that, but I do know some stores do less of the personal services like that.
And we as consumers have also taken the easy route on that. I remember we used to gift wrap things, but now anymore we put it in a nice-looking bag and throw in some crepe paper, and then we're done with it. So our expectations, even for consumers, have changed, and how we gift wrap has changed on the consumer side as well.
Department stores used to be a big driver of Christmas displays and hoopla and so forth. Dr. Joseph, are department stores like, I guess, Macy's or Dillard's, and that used to be the Jones Store and Emery Bird, big department stores like that, are those a shrinking part of the economy? Are they hanging in, or are they just being replaced by big box stores?
Well, the name of the game is to, if you can provide exclusive products, even this season, for example, some of the best retailers chose strategically to make sure that they had an exclusive set of products, because if you don't have an exclusive set of products, you are playing the price game and your margins are poor. So to respond to your question, the departmental stores are a shrinking breed, but the store here in town comes to mind have been particularly good at carrying a specialized line, exclusive line, and they can still command a premium clientele.
Kansas City, if you have had a specific shopping experience this year that tells you something is changing out there, or something, a fond memory of long ago that hasn't changed, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, or you can reach us on Twitter, as several people have done, at KCURCST. Dr. Joseph, does this end-of-the-year shopping binge we know in America, and I guess it's true in Europe too, does it occur in other countries, perhaps countries with less of a historical Christian influence?
That's a good question, and I can respond to that having grown up in India. The spike there occurs at a different time, and it typically happens at a festival known as the Festival of Lights, mm-hmm. where there is an emphasis placed on new clothes. There's an emphasis placed on sprucing up your house, much as in the same way we put lights around the Christmas season here in the West. So, again, it's a time of renewal, a time of freshening up, a time of, you know, moving forward. And this seems to be common in many cultures. So
that whenever the festival, the common, the popular festival is, will be a time when people will buy and sell stuff.
Yes, there's increased consumption of clothes and also the kinds of things that would make your house look prettier. The house gets a fresh paint of coat, a fresh coat of paint. You know, maybe you change the furniture. There's a lot of gift giving. Again, seems to be hardwired into our psyche. So whether it happens in October or in December, there is a time when it does happen in many cultures.
Across cultures, I suppose there are some people out there who don't celebrate any winter holiday. And if you have feelings about this or if you've lived in other cultures, give us a call at 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCURCST. Jennifer Crane, you are getting mostly how diverse is your audience at the Olive Electric Home that takes these tours?
It's pretty diverse. We do have families who bring young children in and of course, kids are seeing an aluminum tree for the first time and trying to get a sense of life without computers, for example. But and then, of course, we have people who are older and remember the 50s, maybe owned a home in the 50s, and very much remember, which is great. That really gives us more information to pass along to other visitors when they come through and see the house and can tell their own personal stories.
All right. We have a call now from Diana in Parkville. Good morning, Diana.
Good morning. How are you guys? Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that, first of all, there is nothing in the world that I need. I am so blessed that there's nothing I need so badly that I need to camp out in front of a Best Buy or any other store, Walmart or anybody, at 3 o'clock in the morning for days and days and days before Christmas. But I'm actually leaving town right now to my family farm for Christmas. And I am taking with me not one, but two handmade gifts. And I'm also taking with me some pieces of quilt. I have a nephew who is getting married in the summer. And so I am taking some pieces of quilt, and I'm going to ask family members to just sit around and stitch just a little bit. Everybody to throw in one or two stitches to give him this double wedding ring quilt on his wedding day.
Sounds like a regular Courier and I sort of Christmas,
Diana. Yeah. And on top of that, I'm just delighted. One of my favorite memories from my childhood on that same family farm, my granny was very poorly educated, but she had a brilliant memory, and she recited poetry. And one of them was a poem called Selfish Billy Green. And I have finally located a copy of this poem, Selfish Billy Green. And I'll be at my brother's home, which is formerly my grandparents' home on the farm, and we'll get to recite Selfish Billy Green again.
Well, I hope you enjoy that, and I hope everyone around you does. It sounds like an interesting way to, say, replicate the good old days.
Well, I hope the younger generation does. I sound so old as I say that, but my brother and I have laughed about this, that maybe the 19, 20, 21-year-olds in the group may not appreciate it as much as we will.
Well, good luck, Diana.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go now to Mary Ann in Brookside, who works at a retail store. Good morning, Mary Ann.
Hi. Good morning. I was just calling in response to the caller who said that stores now have Valentine products out. Mm-hmm. And my experience selling retail the last couple of years is that we don't get as many holiday products as we used to. Stores, retailers can't afford to have a lot of items that are left that they have to sell for half price after Christmas. And we're running out of Christmas stock. So, and I see a lot of Valentine products in our stock room. I would imagine that store really needs, either they have their shelves empty or they put out what's been sent to them. So it's not so much to get you to buy the Valentine products as we need something on our shelves.
As they run out of other product.
They do, because before we would just sell thousands of dollars worth of items half price or 75% off. They can't afford that anymore.
All right, Marianne, thanks very much for sharing that experience with you. Jennifer Crane, before we leave, remind us once again how soon we can go see the all-electric house.
Oh, you can see the all-electric house today if you like, Monday through Saturday. First tour starts at 1 o'clock. The last tour starts at 4 o'clock. So please come out and join us. We'd love you to see the house.
Our guest today has been Jennifer Crane of the Johnson County Museum, and also we've been had Dr. Kisan Joseph, a professor of marketing at the University of Kansas School of Business. Dr. Joseph, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And that's thanks to all our guests for being with us this morning, and callers too. Now, for more information on our guests and upcoming shows, you can visit our website, kcur.org. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Our announcer was Kim Noble. You can go to KCUR.org not only for this show, but other archive programming, podcasts, and more. I'm Monroe Dodd. Tune in to Central Standard Friday next week as the food critics and I cut into the rich history of Kansas City restaurants. This is Central Standard Friday. Enjoy your day and the holiday ahead.